Independent KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and for the world at www.kpfk.org. Support free speech and freeform radio. Peace.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and around the world on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. So we have this abiding sense that we shouldn't screw this up. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com, your source for all things not covered on The Car Show. I am joined this week and every week by my co-host, an attorney specializing in automotive law, a Motor Press Guild member, and owner of not one, but two Mazdas, and we will get to that later in the show, Michelle Spencer, or as we like to call her, Lady Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Well, thank you, Mark. Did you realize it has been 2 years now that you and I have been hosting this show together?
Time is flying by.
It's happy anniversary.
Every week.
Yes.
Every week's a joy. Also joining us, and he actually showed up this time, is industry veteran, senior analyst at iccars.com and host of the YouTube channel Carl Brower Cars, and now a co-host at the nationally syndicated The Drive Radio, Carl Brower. Welcome, Carl.
Ooh, thank you. Yeah, I think it's only because I was on this show that I was able to get onto that nationally syndicated The Drive show. So thank you guys for helping to launch me into a, you know, orbit that, well, I'll probably drift off into space eventually. But for now, I'm just in a great orbit. So thank you.
So many careers have been launched here. Well, actually,
it's a great stepping stone, right?
It's a stepping stone, but I don't know if it's going up or going down. It is a step. So, which has no bearing on our new guest, our next guest, right. Michelle. Who do we have here?
Well, we have Bernie Herrera with us today, and he is a longtime board member for SoCal RX Club in Southern California. He's a Mazda specialist. I would say he's a Mazda guru, and he's joining us today to talk about 7 Stock, which is coming up in November. So welcome, Bernie.
Well, welcome, guys. Thank you very much for the invite. I wouldn't go as far as guru, maybe. And since I can't step down anymore, I think I'm looking forward to maybe going up on this one. Basically rotary kind of guy for the last 40 years. I have no idea why, but I've been fortunate enough to be in a position to do this great event called 7 Stock. We're going on year 27 year, and it's going to be about 30 years since we've been doing it. We had to cancel a couple because of the COVID situation thing that happened. You know, I think you guys remember that, you know, a little while ago, something, you know, everything shut down for a little bit. But 27 years of celebrating Mazda rotary power, basically, in Southern California, which is a very unique market that allows us and affords us to be able to do this great show every year. This year, we're taking it back to basics. It's going back to the park, as we call it. We were doing it at the racetracks. But as you all know, there are no more racetracks in Southern California, sadly. We were second to last at Irwindale for shows. We finished the last 2 years at Irwindale. Previous to that, we had been doing Auto Club Speedway, again, wah-wah. And we're maybe waiting to see what happens with Willow now after all the new ownership and stuff like that. So that might be something exciting for the future. But super happy to be here with you guys, and you know, happy to speak 7 Stock. If you want me to keep going, or
Tell us first of all, I've actually been to, I think it was the 7 Stock. It was a lot of Mazdas. I remember that. Tell us what it is, when it is, and where it is. How about
that? Absolutely. Yeah, so I think, Mark, you were at 7 Stock 13. I remember the Auto Week article. As a matter of fact, I think I sent it to Mazda just 2 days ago. They were asking for press on 7 Stock, and I referenced some of the work that you did on that one, and that was at the corporate office.
Right.
So this year, we're going to be at Oak Canyon Park up in Santiago Canyon, just north of Irvine, just north of Lake Forest up there. It's off of Santiago Road. You guys are kind of getting the exclusive. We're about to announce it. We're kind of doing it as a pop-up almost here this year, since it's a back to basics, kind of static show, and we're kind of excited. It's a private park. Very cool. Literally the show is the largest single day rotary engine powered show in the world, basically right now, as it stands. We've been to a few, and, it just keeps growing. We're amazed that people come from all over the world. At last count, there was 15 countries that participated in Seven Stock, and we still don't know why. We call it our one-day barbecue. Literally, it's a one-day show that people from Japan, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, they come to celebrate the little Wankel engine. And it's amazing to us that after all these years, the enthusiasm is still going strong. And obviously, we're the ones pushing Mazda to hurry up with whatever this new rotary thing is going to be, and let's get it out there, you know. So I just got back from Japan, went to the Mazda Fan Festa, which is a huge Mazda celebration to get enthusiasts. They run all the rotary powered legend cars there, and was able to speak to some of the factory folks and get a couple birds in my ear about they're trying really hard to get this new rotary vehicle out and hopefully to the masses soon. So Seven Stock has been kind of in line with Mazda in trying to promote rotary power and promote the brand also. You know, Mazda brand has really stepped up into what it is now. And we've kind of taken the road trip, as you say, with them, and we're happy to keep partnering with them. They've told me they're bringing some cool stuff to the show, and it's going to be November 22nd, Saturday, November 22nd at Oak Canyon Park. And we're going to put all the details out on the socials, on the Instagram.
What are the hours?
It's going to be 9 to about 3, 9 to 4 is typical show hours, kind of like the JCCS. And we'll put it all out on the socials, our Instagram, Seven Stock Instagram, and a Facebook Instagram, and a few other spots. So all that.
A lot of parking for people?
There'll be a lot of parking. There's actually a lot of general parking there. I was surprised, but we went to go visit. There's actually a huge, I don't think it's paved, but it's a huge flat dirt lot where they park stuff. They've done festivals up there. I think they did a VW show not too long ago up there, and a couple raves and concerts and stuff.
So, yeah, there's been a Porsche exhibit there too.
And a Porsche, that's awesome. I mean, there's a little lake, there's a Ferris wheel, so it kind of just this very campy kind of back to basics. And we're celebrating 40th anniversary of the FC RX-7. So this year is 40th anniversary of the FC, the second gen RX-7. And interesting enough, some of the motif that we're using is like Back to the Future movie. And we didn't know that this year is also 40th anniversary for Back to the Future. So kind of interesting where both of those melded. So we're kind of combining a little bit of that in the theme, and really, really making things kind of happen and really go back to that basics. Just a nice, very nice park meet where everybody can go hang and just have a great time celebrating rotary engine.
So what Mazdas will people see if they come to this show? It says Seven Stock. I assume there's more than just RX-7, or is it primarily RX-7? What will be there?
Yeah, so the question is great, because Seven Stock always gets the focus of what is Seven Stock, and it's as easy as the guy who named it was an RX-7 show and Woodstock. So a crazy gathering of RX-7 people, but over the years, the branding has stuck. But obviously the show is not just for RX-7s. It spans from a 1967 Cosmo Sport rotary powered engine car Mazda to the very latest and greatest RX-8 R3 model. So anything in between, any other brand, also NSU, any Wankels that would like to attend, motorcycles, we get motorcycles, Suzuki motorcycles. We've seen Hercules. We've seen a Hercules there one time, and airplanes. We've had an airplane or two. Boats. So anything with the rotary, and you're going to see 510 Datsuns and 240 Datsuns. Anything that they put a rotary engine into will be in attendance at the show. And that's kind of been a really cool. The people from Mazda that come from Japan have been shocked and amazed at what the rotary engine has been placed into outside of a Mazda product. So it's a celebration of all things rotary engine. So anything that you can think with the rotary engine, if they can make it there, and we don't care if it runs or not, you can actually push it there if you want. Project vehicles are very welcome. Things in, you know, we're there for it. Race cars, bring them. We're great for it. So yeah, that's been one of the celebrations. To us, it's more of a gathering than any type of show. We do give out a few trophies, but that's not the point of this show. The show really is to celebrate that interest that all of us have in that weird little Wankel engine.
There was a Miata with a rotary, and there's also been a guy who shows up with the BMW that they dropped a rotary engine in that as well.
Yeah, so there's several of those.
You never know what you're going to see.
You'll never know. And we invite also quirky Mazda vehicles that are not rotary, little AZ1s. If you know those little K cars with the gull wings on them, you can get a few of those guys out. And there's been a few of the RR360s, those really first model Mazdas with the little like three-cylinder engines in them. So it's expanded a little bit more to the celebration. And we usually invite a few of the Miata folks out to see, and sometimes they show, sometimes they don't. So you never know. And since we don't like fully pre-register everybody, it's kind of show up that day, find out what happens.
Like those of us that do want to, you know, show our car and have a space and that, you know, let you guys know that we're coming, we register ahead of time. But I mean, the committee's never going to turn somebody down who shows up with a trailer with a couple of really cool items in there. It's going to be like, come on. Park over there.
Yeah, the impetus for Seven Stop really was when I was a kid, the RX-7 Club of America was around. But I was a 16, 17-year-old kid with an RX-7 that I barely had enough money to wash the thing. You know what I mean? That was about all I could afford, mid-80s. And sometimes, we'd come out to some of the club stuff, and those guys were all doctors and lawyers and, you know, high-end dudes with money and the vibe wasn't cool sometimes. So when I finally did the show, my whole goal was to welcome all those current 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 16-year-olds into the car scene. And our philosophy is, listen, you can bring your car. I don't care if you're 3 or 4 fenders, different colors, if you have some dings and dents. All we ever ask at Seven Stock is wash your car. Wash your car, have a little pride, and you're in with us. You're cool. You know what I mean? You can come hang. And I just never wanted that feeling that I had when I was a kid that, you know, people weren't kind of very accepting. We are the opposite, man. We know that these guys are going to turn into me in 20 years, 30 years. You know what I mean? They're going
to. You could write a movie about that. That sounds like a good movie script.
It is so great to see the kids out there because they just love it. There's such a variety of things to see.
Yeah, we're on third generation now of families that come to Seven Stop. We have people there now with their grandkids. Yeah. Coming with the grandfather, the sons, and the grandkid in their own cars now.
It's true.
Born on at Seven Stock. It was
Okay.
So Bernie, I've got a couple questions. One is, or well, this is more of a comment, I guess. But back in the Paleolithic era, like the 90s, I had a girlfriend whose dad had a second gen RX-7 convertible,
right?
Red with a black top. That thing was so cool, and it drove so well. And I was always bummed that there wasn't, because they never built, I'm sure you're well aware, a turbo RX-7 turbo generation of that generation with the convertible. And I always had this dream. It's like, all right, I want to get a shell, a convertible shell, and put the turbo engine in it. Just have the best of everything.
So let me put my rotor nerd hat on right here. Actually, you'll be shocked that all convertibles in Japan were turbo cars.
Wow.
The only reason they sent naturally aspirated cars to the U.S. was insurance purposes. The cost of insurance on a turbo vert here would have been kind of pricing the car out of the market where they wanted to be. And they wanted that turbo 2 to be the kind of exclusive high performance. So in Japan, they do the opposite of what you just said. Oh, it would have been great to get an NA car over there. So they don't have any naturally aspirated convertibles. They're all turbo cars.
You always want what you can't have. But now you've just convinced me, because I always assumed maybe the body couldn't handle it. It was a torquing, you know, like a body stiffness thing. Now you've just told me, no, that wasn't, there was no mechanic.
That wasn't the case. No, as a matter of fact, one of our friends who passed away tragically, he had converted a car to a turbo 2, a driveline, a convertible. And we raffled that off at one of the Seven Stock events about 4 or 5 years ago. And it was one kid who bought one ticket who didn't know whether to buy a raffle ticket or a t-shirt. And somebody convinced him to buy the raffle ticket, and he won that convertible. We did it as a tribute to him. We went through the whole car, got it all done, worked with the vendors, kind of did it as a promo thing. And he walked away with that car. But yeah, you'll be happy to know. Yeah, the drivetrain and everything does go into the convertible car. And actually, it's a stiffer chassis, that a lot more bracing in the convertible. So it is something that's been done quite a bit. But yeah, in Japan, they were wishing they could have NA cars.
Crazy, Matt.
I love that. Now, my other question, just my mention was, I'm going to show my lack of knowledge, or at least partial knowledge, enough to be dangerous. There's a distinction for Mazda and the 24-hour of Le Mans, and a unique win that they were able to achieve. And wasn't that with a rotary-powered vehicle?
Yeah, that's correct. The very famous 1991 787B model car. And that was with a four-rotor car that they had built, especially. The backstory there was Mazda and all the other manufacturers knew they were going to go to that Formula One model. That 3.5 V10 model basically was going to come up. It was supposed to be a 91, but, you know, the sanctioning bodies, but what they didn't predict who was going to be there, who wasn't going to be there. They didn't have enough cars, so they let some of the old cars run. And Mazda actually had hired a lot of great people over there, including Jackie Ickx, to run the team for this last year. And over the last 3 years before 91, they had just got a brand new shiny supercomputer back in Hiroshima. And every single department back in Hiroshima actually contributed, including the interior department, to trying to make 91 the year that they won. What made it very clever was Jackie Ickx was able to do a lot of lobbying. So they let them run at a lighter weight. They let them run at 800 kilos versus the 1,000 plus that everybody else had to run at. And nobody cared. It's Mazda. Who cares? They've been running for 10 years. They've never done anything. Who, you know, what's the big deal? It is, though. Hey, we got a bunch of fast Formula One drivers, you know, including Johnny Herbert, which almost died at that race. They took him out of the car. He was passed out. He didn't even get to go to the podium. They took him straight into the ambulance. He had done three stints directly. He was so dehydrated. They opened the door. He was passed out. As soon as he pulled in, they put him in the ambulance and took him away. But what happened was, as ironic as it sounds, Mazda won that race due to efficiency, rotary engine efficiency in the gas, and the lightweight that it at that moment it actually had run the most laps any car had ever run to history. So people who say it's a fluke, it was actually a lot more than just a fluke of them winning. I would say they were the most prepared for that time. The 787B chassis was one of the only all carbon fiber monocoques. Also one of the first cars to run carbon fiber brakes in endurance racing at the time. But what threw Mazda over the top for preparation was the amount of telemetry that they used in sports car racing. Nobody had done that level. Mazda had already tested that car for two 24-hour races before it went to Le Mans. So all those people that kind of laughed at them and ridiculed them and, you know, who cares? You can give them 10,000 pounds off. They're never going to even make it. Yeah, by the end, I think a lot of them were a little bit sorry that it had happened. You know what I mean? But that was it.
Along those lines, I was at Auto Week when that happened, and we didn't have a photo because all the photographers were shooting the 962s and whatever else they thought would win. And so the Mazda wins, and we're like scrambling around. Who has a picture? And Larry Edsel, who I think was the motorsports editor at the time, he had like an Instamatic, and he had a picture, and that became the cover picture with the Mazda on the cover of Auto Week winning the 24 Hours of Le Mans. So good for them. Hooray.
I'm glad I asked that question. We had the right person to ask that. I had the right, because I knew that was like a kind of a cool story there, and that was all I knew. So
yeah, and then they become the first, obviously, first Japanese car to ever win at Le Mans. Right. And so the amount in Japan way above Mazda was, it became iconic as a Japanese situation. It became like Otani right now. It was a phenomenon, this thing. But Mazda really focused all his efforts to win Le Mans. It didn't really do well any rest of the season and the rest of the World Endurance Champ, but it wasn't supposed to. All the focus that Mazda had put on that program was to win Le Mans that year. They knew that was the last chance they were ever going to get. And that clever lobbying by the part of the European team, Jackie Ickx and his people, really just put it over the top. And people, that's cheating. It wasn't cheating. It's part of racing, lobbying and everything else. It's the race. What are you going to do? And they won.
And you can celebrate all this on Saturday, November 22nd. And what's the name of the park again?
Oak Canyon Park, and it's off of Santiago in Santiago Canyon.
Okay, from 9 to 3, Saturday, November 22nd, 7 stock. Bernie, you can stick around if you want, or we can cut you loose, whatever you your choice here.
Yeah, I'll stick around a little bit. I heard you're going to speak JCCS a little later.
A little bit later, we're going to do a review of that. So first of all, Carl, you're going to take us to Las Vegas.
Well, yeah. And I'm sorry because I know a lot of people don't want to go there, including me necessarily. But no, just Las Vegas.
What a resounding way to introduce the Wynn Concours.
No, Las Vegas.
This is why we have no advertisers.
Exactly. And it's beautiful. We can say whatever we want. No, if you want to go to lovely Las Vegas, the Wynn Concours will be happening November 1st and 2nd. It's basically that city saying, hey, you know, that whole Monterey Car Week thing and all, that's like, so, you know, 1934, we're new and we're cool. And we're doing it now in the 21st century at the new flashy bright lights, big city Vegas way. So it's a third year for the Wynn Concours. A lot's going on. I will be there and myself. I'm going because it is, believe it or not, guys, when I got this invite, I was like, no way. 20 years of the Bugatti Veyron. Yes, indeed. It's been 20 years since the Bugatti Veyron hit. And that's what they will be celebrating as part of that. Just one little piece of the Concours will be about Bugatti's 20th anniversary as a Veyron producer. So I will be there for that. But there'll be a lot going on.
Are you going to be signing autographs, Carl? Because a lot of people will go. Hearing you,
I mean, I would certainly sign autographs. I'd feel very bad for anyone who wanted one, but I would happily sign them.
Oh, we're going to do some hero cards. You know what hero cards are, right? What the race car drivers have. You're going to need to get some Carl Brower hero cards. And then you could say, there, look, I'm the next Ryan Seacrest of automotive media. There we go.
That's something to aspire to, right, Mark?
I hope so.
You're all right.
Michelle, what do we have going closer to home here?
Well, all right. Now, if you are familiar with Museo Museum, it's located in Anaheim. They have a lowrider exhibit that just started this week called Lowrider Culture in the United States, and it's going to run through December 14th. This is a really cool exhibit because they have things that are completely different from like what the Peterson just had recently and a couple of other lowrider exhibits that we've had in Southern California. This one has artifacts from the Smithsonian Institute. And it's traveling. It goes across the country. So they're stopping here in Anaheim for this couple of months. They're going to have several lowriders on display from local car clubs. Okay, so that you will see some SoCal car culture exhibit vehicles. And these are going to go back all the way to the 1940s.
Nice.
They're one of them that they had featured in the Pilot Times, which is our Orange County newspaper, is a 1949 Black Cherry, which is, of course, Bernie knows this, my favorite, because that's the same color as my RX-8. It's a Chevy Fleetline nicknamed Spill the Wine, and that is the centerpiece of the exhibit. And it's, if you can Google it, go Pilot Times OC Cruising Through Culture, and it pops up. Beautiful vehicle. Then they're going to have some zoot suits, and they're going to have some other things on exhibit with in connection with Chicano culture. So the movie Zoot Suit will also be shown on November 13th as part of this event. And so if you want information, go to museo.org, museo.org.
Very good. Thank you. We're like 3 minutes over our allotted time, but who cares? It's our show. We do not have adult supervision. Just a couple of more quick things. On November 2nd, if you need a location to go to, you have your classic car, you want to go somewhere, I'm going to be at the Ferrari Club of Ferrari Club of America Southwest Region is going to have a rally going to Santa Paula Airport for the Santa Paula Airport open house. So if you go there on Sunday, November 2nd, you will see a whole bunch of Ferraris parked there. And a lot of the plane owners open up their hangars and you can walk around and look at the planes and talk to the guys. It's always pretty interesting. That is from 10 to 2 at the Santa Paula Airport. You'll be able to find that. And I'll be there, hopefully, on a motorcycle. I'm getting a big, fat Harley. I asked for the biggest, heaviest, most ridiculous Harley they had, and they gave me a CBO. So, looking,
you're gonna be the anti Ferrari at that show. Big, heavy, and American versus light and nimble.
Yeah. Right, so, park it far away, Mark, to avoid
it. Then November 13th through 16th, In-N-Out Burger Drag Strip. The NHRA is coming with ground pounding nitro fueled wheel standers. That is November 13th through 16th at the Pomona Drag Strip. Go to NHRA.com.
That's their last race of the year, by the way. It all comes down to Pomona, as they say.
Yeah, that's what they want you to think. NHRA, yes, is still going on. Cal Club's still going on. 75th anniversary of Button Willow, November 15th. If you want to find out about it, go to Cal Club HQ at calclub.com. That is, you know, that the founding of racing in America, apart from NASCAR, you could trace it back to sports car racing anyway, to Cal Club back in the ancient times, even older than me, which is hard to imagine. Okay.
What?
Now, in the news section, we have a couple of things that very interesting things that we did. Let's dive right into Japanese Classic Car Show, because Bernie was there, I was there, Michelle was there. Who wants to start talking about what they saw? Let's go with Bernie, who has been sitting patiently while we insult our listeners.
Mark, I just want to know, are you signing autographs at that Ferrari thing?
I am. But there'll be, you have to deposit $100 in my charity.
No. So, for your ballroom.
Yeah. Well, let's not get political.
It's awful fun. Yeah. So, Japanese Classic Car Show obviously celebrated a 20-year anniversary this year. You know, happy for Terry and Koji, the founders. They're friends of mine, personal friends. And, it was awesome to see the participation by the OEMs. You know, almost all the Japanese OEMs were there with the big presence, obviously Toyota, Nissan, Mazda, Subaru, I think. And there was a few others, but Honda was there too, obviously. Yeah. What really struck me, and then I think Peter Brock and his crew were all there. The ERV squad was being celebrated, which was awesome. It was awesome to see how the growth of the actual enthusiast has really come up. I mean, it must be a 240Z show now. I mean, there was so many 240Z on the ground that I was impressed. But it was just great to see how many more cars, newer cars, are showing up, which just lets me know for myself, seeing that this show, that the enthusiasm on the grassroots is strong and that people keep coming to the show. I work the front gate, so I usually see everybody drive in and come out, and then I'll volunteer as a judge for the Mazda side of things. And the show, although I've been doing it with them almost all these 20 years, it always surprises me. And there was quite a bit of vehicles at this show that were really stunners, and I was just over the top checking them out. So, impressive show. Congratulations to the team there for 20 years. And I hope they can do another 20 years, because I think this is an up-and-coming market where the divide between the car communities has kind of been split more, you know, where I think this were a conquerors kind of maybe started way back when. And then, you know, it's gone so far astronomical into outer space that most people can't relate to it anymore. But this type of show, I think, is really down to the grassroots where people are relating, even though I'll tell you that I saw a couple bills there that were easily $200,000-$300,000. So there is that there also. But for the most part, it's cars that we remember, cars that we grew up with, and cars that we can relate to. And
my favorite, speaking of that, was the Pete Brock Datsun 510 that he ran in the Baja 1000, mm-hmm. which is this rusted out clap. I mean, there was rust everywhere. It was, you needed a tetanus shot just to walk past this thing. And yet there it was. It was still in one rusty piece. And it looked just, that was my favorite. Michelle, what did you think of Japanese Classic Car Show?
Oh, well, you know, I had to scope out all the Miatas. There was a huge row of Miatas, and they all are, it's been around so long. People customize them, all kinds of different mods on them. It's so fun to just check that out. And then there was this Mitsubishi that was a camper. And I had lunch with the guy that owned it, and he was telling me all about how he modded it, and he had the only one there. It was really cool, because it was like a minivan, but it wasn't, you know. So I enjoyed that. And of course, all the Z's. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. There were Z's to the horizon. I think over the horizon. But one of my favorite cars I'll just throw in was Frank Choi's RX-7 Dragster, the big yellow one with the mother's logo on the side. That was actually Frank Choi built that. It was and Frank Choi, of course, is the founder of the Battle of the Imports, which was featured more or less in the first Fast and Furious movie, but really kind of represented the whole import car culture craze of that era. And that was just a beautiful big yellow car there. But yeah, there were an awful lot of Z's for sure.
So I have a question, because I haven't been to this show yet. Terrible mistake here. But do they have motorcycles at the show too? Do they have Japanese?
Yeah. Oh, they did. They had a bunch of really cool. Honda had a bunch of classic motorcycles. Motul, the oil maker, sponsored. I think they sponsored several of them. There were some race bikes. There were just regular old. Like there was an early 60cc Yamaha, and the license plate on it said C Rocket, which you know, the expression that they use for those is really funny, because 60cc's, I think with it. So it was a really enjoyable show this year. I thought there was a Toyo Pet, for goodness sake.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Toyo Pet. You will never see a Toyo Pet anywhere else in the world. It is the worst, I think. Is there a worse car ever made than the Toyo Pet?
Well,
it was like overweight, underpowered. They had it on the market for a minute, and then everybody said no. Said okay, hang on, and we'll they took to it back, and they redid it. They redid the whole company, studied the American market, came back. There's a million stories like that,
right? Yeah, and Mazda turned out too. They brought the race cars.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, I'd be remiss if Mazda actually had a tribute to two or three enthusiasts in the community that had passed away this year. One was the Bonneville Miata, which rotary powered. Sam Okamoto, just a local gentleman from Azusa who had been challenging at a Bonneville for the last maybe 4 or 5 years, and suddenly passed. And now that car is residing in the Mazda basement in their collection, which was very cool to see that car. And Abel Ibarra, import drag racing legend, his brother Chato, they had built a car for basically a stillborn class in import racing. Never raced, but the car has remained exactly as built. And his brother sadly passed away this last year. And Mazda also asked them to bring that car out. They had a tribute for them there. And talking on race cars that are exactly as they were, they had their signature car, which they finished IMSA with here this last IMSA round. That car got signed by all enthusiasts at that race, and the dirt from that race is still on it, and they displayed that car. BRT24 was there, so the P car. And that was pretty cool to see that Mazda kind of shook it up a little bit and brought some different things out this year. And, of course, all the rotary classics, there was so many of those. And like Michelle said, on the Miatas, we got to judge the Miatas, and it's so difficult because everybody customizes it their way, and they're all cool. And the one guy who ended up winning, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, but he came out, he drove his out from New Mexico, and the car was styled in a very English, British kind of Lotus type of way. And it just fit the car so nice. And he was the winner. He was so happy. But yeah, so, I mean, it's incredible the things you see when you come to Japanese class shows. So, Carl, you definitely have to get out one of these years.
Right. Yeah, and also, speaking of the Miatas, there was a tribute to Tom Latano there also with a rail.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
And, of course, Pete Brock himself came down from Henderson, Nevada, and it signed a lot of autographs. So that was
wow. Great.
And speaking of racing heroes, that same day, I drove from Japanese Classic Car Show to Willow Springs for an event called Willow Springs Reimagined. Now, did any of you guys go to that?
No.
Okay, so it's just me. So I'll just talk quickly about it. Willow Springs Racetrack, as you know, has new owners, and they have big plans, and they say everything's going to be just fine. And I was amazed there were 5,000 people out there in the desert. I don't think there have ever been 5,000 people at Willow Springs for anything. And they were there walking around, and they had they had Jimmy Johnson doing donuts in his NASCAR Cup car.
Wow.
They had Jenson Button driving around, waving to the crowd. And they had Leah Block, Ken Block's daughter. Nice. She was doing hot laps and donuts. It was all, it was quite a big party. So, you know, I'm hopeful that Willow Springs will continue on and might even have a couple of days on their calendar where it's like the Alfa Romeo Club can rent it out and have a race. We're going to wait and see on that. They're saying yes, that they will. And so, you know, more power to them. It was a fun day. And if we had a 2-hour show, we would go on at great lengths for that.
Sorry. Well, it's like, I just found it exciting.
It's what Bernie said too. They're all dying. The reason there's 5,000 people at Willow Springs, it's the sole survivor. There's nowhere else to go for a racing activity, I guess, and Button Willow, which I think is also on our list, but to talk about in the show. But, you know, there's just, we're down to like, I don't know, two tracks south of like Sacramento in the state.
Chuckwalla, baby. Chuckwalla.
Well, that's right. Chuckwalla and Thermal, I guess, is out there and stuff.
It's so far out in the desert, you need a UFO to actually get there.
And then there's one in Bakersfield. We got Kevin Harvick's Kern County Raceway still going.
Yeah, so they're a quick on that. The guys who were the promoters over at Irwindale, they're running the Kern County Raceway.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they wanted us to take seven stock out there. That we're kind of geographically challenged with a lot of the old school cars.
Yeah.
We're not going to go 100 miles. Whoa. So we're doing, of course, Button Willow. We have to mention Button Willow with their new track. Their new track is open at Button Willow now. So that's, but it's still 100 plus miles away. So
well, there's the Apple Valley Speedway. Don't forget that.
Apple.
Yeah, that's right.
I got to get out to that one of these days. Never been there. And Michelle, your favorite track out there in the Inland Empire.
Arizona Speedway.
Arizona Speedway. They have a drag strip. They have an oval. Yeah. Okay, so it's all is not lost. You know, have faith, people. It will come back. Things will come back.
We're not going to do a betting pool on which one's next to close. We're not going to do that.
No, that would be just even more cynical than I think I could handle. But okay. I just went and saw today the Peterson's new exhibit on Aston Martin. That is opening, let's see. Oh, it already opened. Or wait, no. Aston Martin opens, it says October 18th with a party and a gala. So anyway, it is a really nice exhibit. It is worth going to see. You have the entire history of Aston Martin. So right in one corner is a 1949 DB2 prototype. That looks really cool. There's a DB4 GT Zagato. Remember the Bulldog, that wedge-shaped thing? That is there.
Wow.
I think a couple of David Sidorek's cars. He loves the Zagato-bodied Astons. A couple of those were present. Right in the middle, of course, is a Valkyrie and a Formula One car, 2023 Aston Martin Formula One car. It is just a shell. It's what they call a display car, so there's no engine in it. But man, you get up close to those things. It's so much. I think it's like twice as big as Formula One cars used to be back in the 70s. The Yardley McLaren and cars like that. They were really short wheelbases, big wings. But these things, the new cars, are just really long and aerodynamic and all that. So go and check that out. The Aston Martin exhibit at the Peterson Automotive Museum. Go to peterson.org. And check it out. I think you can even buy tickets there, but that's a lot of fun. It's called Performance and Prestige, A History of Aston Martin. And actually, new exhibit opens on October 30th. Wait, I'm getting a couple of the dates here. I don't know what it is. It looked like it was about to open, but maybe it's October 30th, in which case, don't go until October
30th. Right. And Mark, did they have any of the James Bond vehicles?
Yes, they had the DB5, and there's a big picture. One of the most interesting things about the exhibit is the walls behind it. There was a huge picture of Sean Connery leaning against his DB5, you know, all smug with his hand in his pocket. Soon as me. And there was a picture of Mick Jagger in front of his, I guess he had an Aston Martin at one point. There's a wonderful picture, just mural sized, covers half of the wall on one side of Carroll Shelby winning Le Mans 1959 in an Aston Martin with Roy Salvadori as his co-driver. But I had never seen any of these pictures, and they were just, you know, some of what is available at this new exhibit opening, again, as far as we know, October 30th. I'm gonna look this up and get you the right date in just a second. Michelle, why don't you talk about the most dangerous intersections in Los Angeles while I have a shout out? It's right there in the script. You can't miss it.
Sure. No problem. So,
what is the most dangerous intersection in LA?
Slauson and Figueroa. Figueroa and Slauson.
Or either one.
17 felony hit and run collisions.
Ouch.
And 5 severe injuries over the last 4 years. And not to mention pedestrians getting hit. Aye. So just, you know, do the Nomini Patri, bless yourself before you go through there, and just be careful. And then, of course, the second one is in the valley, in Panorama City at Sepulveda and Roscoe. I mean, that's a bit.
And I remember hearing about that one. I remember, you know, I've got a friend who lived in that area, and I remember hearing that
right, were, the, right where our folks, our friends from Galpin, the Galpin Motor Beats.
Yeah,
exactly.
So people are buying those new Fords, and they're just
really Mustang. You must be a lot of money.
Standing on it.
Just... You know what? I think that the 65 series collisions that happened there were 90% of them were Mustang owners.
Everybody getting those Mustangs built right away.
Less than 1,000 miles.
They were rotary powered Mustangs.
Oh, okay.
October 30th is when the Aston Martin exhibit. October 30th, Aston Martin exhibit opens at the Peterson Museum.
Nice.
October 30th. Do not go today, because when I was there today, there was a big curtain and there was a guy sitting there wouldn't let you go inside. So October 30th, there you go. We are up to date. And stay away from Figueroa and Slauson.
If you want more info on that, the nonprofit that did this study is called Crosstown LA. So you can Google Crosstown LA, most dangerous intersections, and you'll get the complete list.
Yeah.
All right. Yep.
So LA, very dangerous. Just stay home.
Do we want to go to reviews?
Let's go. You ready for reviews? Because Carl, this is like all Aston Martin. No, there's no rotary powered Aston Martin yet, but Carl did drive a new.
Yeah, sort of, I like the yet, Mark.
Yeah, not
yeah,
yet.
So do I. That would be
what did you drive, Carl?
I drove the brand new Aston Martin DBX-S. Okay, so the DBX has been their SUV. It's been out for several years. It was always getting pretty good remarks and reviews on everything from its styling to its driving dynamics. A year ago, I had minimal seat time in it until about a year ago, and I drove the DBX 707, the then top of the line one, and I was highly impressed. Well, a year's gone by, you know, that's DBX is so 2024. So they came out with the new DBX S that has just hit, and it's, is it 107 pounds lighter than the DBX 707, and it makes 20 more horsepower. So more power, less weight. If you ask the guy who started Lotus, Mr. Colin, he would tell you that that's a good thing. So, and sure enough, driving this vehicle up in the Northern California area was really fun and really amazing, because it's not like it's light. It still weighs like 4,800 pounds. It's, you know, it's heading toward 5,000 pounds. But I had a Lamborghini Urus about 3 months ago, and that one weighed 5,500 pounds. Now, I was surprised how well the Lamborghini handled. I'm not going to say that it didn't handle well, because it was shockingly, it's like bizarre, really. It was like, how is this 5,500 pound vehicle going around corners as well? But you can feel it. If you get into the 4,800 pound Aston Martin DBX-S, and they put a lot of lightweighting things from a carbon fiber roof that saves you just 40 pounds right there. And of course, at the roof level, all of us are here enough of enthusiasts to know the only thing better than losing weight is losing high weight that's high on the vehicle, because the center of gravity drops. So it's a carbon fiber roof, first time ever on that DBX-S. But they did a bunch of other things, the front and rear splitters, the wheels. They've just got the thing really light. And then they added horsepower and some tuning changes to take advantage of all that. And I think 0 to 60 is like 3.1 seconds. So it's a crazy, stupid, fast vehicle in a straight line. But you really have to go around corners before you're going to realize how amazing it is.
Now, Carl, you and I were on that other Aston Martin DBX 707 last year, mm-hmm. and I was really impressed with that. You wouldn't think that an SUV of any kind could handle well, and yet that thing handled so well. How much different is it? Like, is it exponentially better, or it sounds like it's just incrementally better? Usually when they add 20 horsepower, all they're doing is they type in some software coding so that the wastegate stays closed on the turbocharger. That's how your generic car maker increases horsepower. Did they say how they increased it?
Yeah, they did. And of course, now, as I say, because it was a few weeks ago when I drove it, but I have a full review that I know goes into all that on Carl Brower Cars on my YouTube channel. But
what's that YouTube channel again? Could you tell us?
That was Carl Brower Cars. And that's Carl with a K, K-A-R-L, Carl Brower Cars.
And Brower, right. B-R-A-U-E-R, Carl Brower Cars. I hear that's an excellent source for automotive information.
That's what they tell me. I don't know if I believe them, but that's what they
check
say.
It out.
But it's more than that. I know what you're saying, Mark, and you think that's like, yeah, we just turned some tuning knobs and all, but they definitely upgraded the engine in multiple ways, and then they upgraded the suspension in multiple ways. I know there was something else. There was like a substantial thing they did to the suspension that would have taken it, would have made the last year's one better, but the fact that it's 100 and plus pounds lighter makes it even better. So it was noticeable, Mark. Like, I was really, really surprised at how rapidly the car could theoretically, of course, I was driving at the speed limit and being very conservative the whole time. But even at that pace, I could tell that in theory, if someone was crazy and had gone like really fast on those same corners, it probably, I've got on good authority, would have handled extremely well in a way that you would just not believe. That's what my theory is. At least.
We are lucky enough to drive a lot of these things. And so these super, what would you call it? Supercar SUVs. There's the Ferrari Purosangue, the Lamborghini Urus, the, of course, Aston Martin DBX, the Bentley, Bentayga even has, I believe, some. And yeah, I guess Rolls-Royce is not really a performance one. But there are a lot of them out there. I have in my mind an idea, but how, Carl, how would you rate the Aston Martin SUV among that elite category?
From my experience, I would say it's probably... it may not be the fastest in a straight line. That Lambo is pretty fast, but it's got to be pretty close. But I think if you were on like Willow Springs, as we were just talking about, or Buttonwillow, or one of the other, you know, still surviving racetracks here, I would put my money, same driver, driving all cars as fast as they can, I'd put my money on the Aston Martin DBXS to go around a track faster than anything else.
And I think it would just be, if you had an interesting road, a good road to drive on, I would agree the DBX would be the one that you would choose. To, you know, if you wanted performance in addition to everything else that an SUV offers, the practicality and prestige. But I think performance and handling, I would have to give the title to the Aston Martin, although they are all very good.
They're all surprisingly good.
The Purosangue, I had one for a week back east, and it was a blast. I enjoyed that. And it was prestigious, too. You know, people buy cars in this category not necessarily because they're parsing out the specs, right, but because they want to impress total strangers on the freeway.
Question on that.
We do in LA. Yes.
Did the DBXS beat the others in terms of pricing?
I believe it is relatively like, I think that Ferrari and the Rolls Royce, I think most of them are relatively tight. I want to say that the DBX is around 250, which is fully in line with that category of cars. Is the starting price for it? No,
and if it's not outrageous, and it's not cutting.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous.
But not compared. Yeah, it's they're all outrageous.
Not compared to a clown. Okay, got it.
I don't think people are pinching pennies up there. People who are getting these, maybe if you're leasing it and you're just leasing it to get a date. Or whatever, maybe those guys are pinching pennies and they're way overextended in credit and all that. But I think a lot of the buyers, the traditional buyers, aren't so concerned about cost, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, people wouldn't do that in California, at least. They wouldn't be so superficial as to extend themselves beyond their financial responsibility just to look good, Mark. You know that.
I am so shallow, I can't even get a wading pool going.
Oh,
it's sad. But anyway,
I don't think any of us have car payments. We all have old cars. I mean, come on. None of us have a car payment. I'll bet you, right? All four of us.
I have not ever had a car payment in my life.
Bernie?
I've only bought one new car, and it was a Mitsubishi IMEV. So what does that tell you?
It tells me
that of all the people in California, the least superficial and concerned about impressing people might be Mark Voss.
I am. Them the one, and you have found them here on the car show.
We splurged on a new IMEV Mitsubishi.
It was something.
You really wanted to stand out, didn't we?
105,000 miles, baby. Still tranking. I always drag that car back onto the show, one way or another.
Every
push it, pull it, or drag it.
It's either that or the Lancia.
The Lancia. Lancia is going to be at Best of France in Italy, which is, I don't know when that's coming up. I'll look that up. Talk amongst yourselves while I look that one up.
Talking about driver, my daily driver now is a 206 Honda Accord V6. Oh. That somebody gave me because they didn't want it, so I'm okay.
Yeah, isn't that great when that happens, Bernie? See, for a couple of years, I had a 2001 325 CI convertible BMW that someone essentially gave me with 205,000 miles on it. And I was like, well, I don't know if I want to take this thing on. And after it got to 217,000 miles, Vegas, Palm Springs a couple times, running fine, I sold it and bought a 2002 330 CI convertible with only 56,000. I had so fallen in love, and I remember driving them when they were new, but I had so fallen in love with the E46 platform. I was like, I can't believe this car fell in my lap, and now I'm like the biggest E46 fan on the planet, and I had to go buy another one. So
yeah, I had never had a Honda V6, and I can't tell you how great those motors are. That older Honda V6 at mid 2000s, early late 90s. That's an awesome motor. All I did was a head job on it. The guy gave it to me. I spent a couple thousand bucks on it, and here I've had it for a couple of years. And like I said, there's no car fame. It's mid 2000s Honda, and it's driving great.
Mm-hmm. I've got a 99 Accord for a while, and I sold it to one of my friends after, I mean, my gosh, I had it for like 8 years. She used it for another 5 years after that. It still didn't die, but she sold it to someone else and got a better car. I mean, they just live forever.
Yeah, my new cars have been Mazdas for the last maybe 4 or 5 cycles, and I'll tell you, I've ran them all to about 300,000 without much issues at all.
Wow, you probably changed the oil though.
Oh, I'm fanatic.
Okay, the best of France and Italy car show, the best car show in the world. Well, now that they're doing Macanissima, maybe that's the best one. The second best one, best of France and Italy, Sunday, November 2nd, from 9 to 3 p.m. Woodley Park in Van Nuys. The if you want to see the Lancia Appia, it'll be there. So it'll be a ton of fun.
Are we going to get a podium finish again for your class, Mark?
Maybe, but it's a great car show. It's just all kinds of Italian and French and Italian cars, as you would expect.
Nice.
Nice. I'm around the corner in the valley, so look forward
gotta
to
go.
It.
You should go check it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Broaden your horizons. You can pick a car to drop a rotary in.
Well, there's a couple guys I know already doing it in the Lamborghini, so I'll send that to you guys.
Oh,
all right.
Nice.
All right, moving on. We have another car review, a 2025 EQS 450 Plus sedan. This is a car that they just hauled out of my driveway this morning. People like to poo-poo this car. They like to say, oh, you know, Mercedes made this back when they thought all cars were going to be electric, and they put all their money and engineering and R&D into what they thought would be an electric future of bulby cars that didn't look necessarily anything but wind cheating efficient. But this thing, I liked it. They redesigned the front end. They even redesigned the front end to make it less look like, I guess, a beluga whale. They added a grill to it,
right?
And the grill is sturdy and strong. I can tell you this because I whacked a traffic barrel going into Las Vegas on Interstate 15, and it didn't affect it at all. It was in great shape. There's a whole nother story to that. It was 2:30 in the morning, and I thought, oh, I have to get to Vegas for this Mercedes program that starts in a couple of hours, you know, and I actually just for a second nodded off and whacked the traffic barrel. So be careful, folks. Pull over and take a rest. But anyway, the 2025 EQS 450 Plus sedan behaved fantastically. Now, as you know, that is all electric. It's not a hybrid. It's not a plug-in hybrid. It is just an electric car, 108 kilowatt hours of battery. The official range, 352 miles. Mm. Of official actual range. Now, I left LA, you know, about, I don't know, 11 p.m., which
Smart.
Is another dumb idea. Don't do this.
Smart.
Do as I say, not as I do. But, and I got into it, had 100% charge when I left Los Angeles, and I pulled in onto the strip in Vegas at like 2:30 in the morning, and it had 39% still.
Oh, wow.
So now I did not drive flat out. If I'd been going, you know, if it was an internal combustion car, I might have driven faster. But because it was an electric car, I had to kind of keep that in mind the whole drive. So I think I would, for some reason, I was setting the cruise control at 74 miles an hour, but it made it, you know, no problem. I thought, oh, I'm going to have to stop at least in Baker at that fabulous charging station. If you've ever had an electric car on that drive, everybody stops in Baker. There's about a million Tesla superchargers there. But next to those is an Electrify America thing, because this is still charged by a CCS. It is not charged by the NACS outlets that seem to be in everything and are going to be in everything. And nor was there a converter plug there. But it did work. So I don't know. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed this car. I liked driving it. The problem, of course, is that it has a sticker price as tested, $136,910. That is in a another class. I mean, we were just talking about cars you buy to impress people. This is the car you buy to impress your high school physics teacher. Any of you guys take physics?
I took physics for poets in college, and and this is the best part. I was told I had to take a physics class, and I took I'll just take the standard one, and I was dying, and I went to my counselor, and I was like, I don't want to, you know, destroy my average here. What do I do? Well, you can switch to one of the easier classes and take physics for poets and all. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll take that. You know, and I'm thinking he's being like, you know, creative, you know, well, take the physics for dumb people like you, for poets. I'm like, okay, well, what's the name of the class so I can take it? You know, he said it like three times in the conversation. I'm like, well, what's the name of the class so I can make sure I get the right one? Physics for poets. I already told you. I'm like, that's the name. He's like, yeah, I look up the catalog. It's listed physics for poets. I'm like,
which college was this?
This CU Boulder, where I got my degree at CU Boulder. And then I got like a B plus in it too. I was like, see, pass physics for poets. Look at that.
And the rest is history. Well, your physicist would be impressed by this. It produces 355 horsepower, which isn't that much considering that it weighs around 5,500 pounds. But even so, and it's just rear wheel drive, even so, you get to 60 miles an hour in 5.9 seconds, which, you know, that's not like Carl's DBX.
Right.
But it's still pretty good for a car that weighs 5,500 pounds and is all electric. Now, if you want to move up a little bit, you can move up to the, the EQS 580, which has 516 horsepower, or the AMG EQS at 649 horsepower. So the final word on this is I really enjoyed it. And if you have $139,000, you can enjoy it too. But we are almost out of time. We want to thank Barney for coming on to the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
And telling us stories of rotaries of yore. And we want to thank Carl, even though he is a big, famous, nationally syndicated guy now, he still comes on our show, and we want to thank him. And thank you, Michelle, for everything you do, our staff attorney, fighting the good cause down in Orange County. Remember to like and follow us on Facebook. The website is The Car Show on 90.7 KPFK FM. That is, in fact, the longest name of any show or of any entity on Facebook. But stick around. We will be back here next week on The Car Show.
Support comes from CAP UCLA presenting Pony Chem Collective's Burnout Paradise on November 1st and 2nd at the Nimoy. The award-winning Australian collective delivers a frenetic, physical, and darkly comedic showdown performed on treadmills. Four performers spiral through escalating tasks, confronting burnout, broken systems, and the struggle to set boundaries. More information and tickets available at cap.ucla.edu and kpfk.org.
To engage in any activity
that shall contribute
to a lasting understanding
between nations and between the individuals of all nations,
races, creeds,
and colors.
To gather and disseminate information
on the causes of conflict
between any and all of such groups.
And through any and all means
compatible with the purposes of this corporation.
To promote the study of political and economic problems.
And of the causes of religious, philosophical,
and racial antagonisms.
That is our mission.
Hello, this is Martin Sheen, and you're listening to KPFK.